Welcome to the Plain Label Podcast, Pod Shots.
Look at this, kid. Something I try and teach all my boys.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Podshots. I'm your host, Eric Williams. For this episode, we are discussing the 1990 film Miller's Crossing. Written and directed by Joel and Ethan Coen, the film stars Gabriel Byrne, Albert Finney, John Turturro, and Marcia Gay Harden. Here to discuss the film with me is returning guest, Mr. Ben Teed.
Hey, what's the rumpus?
Nice. That really struck me as funny. Before getting into our discussion, I would like to mention that this podcast is brought to you by the Deliberate Noise Network. Head over to deliberatenoise.com and check out some of the other shows that are over there. Let's do a little drink roll call action there, Benjamin. What do you have in this fine evening?
In my Richard Starkey, that's Ringo, pint glass, mm-hmm. I have one of my new favorites. One of my favorite breweries, Lagunitas.
Oh, I am well versed in the Lagunitas.
Yes. I visited their brewery in November,
mid-November.
In Chicago.
Good.
And I had a great time. That place is incredible. Have you ever been?
Yes, I have. You know, I think last time we spoke, I think it was, after we got off the phone, you were talking about how you're going to go there.
Yeah.
Yes, I have. It's in a rough neighborhood, but I have been there.
Yeah, it was. We went on the worst. You remember that one weekend in November when it snowed? Because we had a very mild winter up to this point. Mm-hmm. And now it's been kind of snowy, but in November it didn't snow at all except one weekend, and it was horrible that weekend. That was the weekend I decided to go to Lagunitas. So it was empty. I mean, there was people inside hanging out. But I'm assuming those were workers or something. And I was like walking in the snow, like a couple, like one of my friends that lives in the area, walked me up to the place and we didn't take a tour, but we had lunch there and I bought a bunch of different versions of their beers and they're starting to, sorry Yingling. It was one of my, you guys were my favorite number one, but I'm thinking Lagunitas is pushing past them.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about it, but it's got some sort of certain.
It's probably crack cocaine.
It's got this little aftertaste or little something different that tastes just slightly different than most beers. And I don't know if it's the type of hops or the amount of hops that are in there because it is a very hoppy and very high alcohol content beer. Most of them anyway. But I really enjoy it. Like I very regularly get some type or another when I'm at the store.
Yeah. And it's available here in Indiana too. So I was able to get, I'm able to get all the versions that they were selling there. I just went there for like t-shirts and merchandise.
Yeah. I got the glass and that was all I ended up getting.
But specifically I'm drinking their holiday one, their holiday ale, Brown Sugar.
Oh yes.
Sweet release.
The Brown Sugar. That's a funny one because they've had the Lagunitas Sucks, the Brown Sugar Substitute Ale, because they couldn't find the original recipe. Yeah.
So they made this by accident.
Yeah, so they had one where they were sort of self-deprecating, which was funny.
I love that.
I think I was, the Maximus was the one that I got real drunk on one time because it's obviously very high alcohol content.
That's a good one too. I've only had a couple of those, but
yeah,
I accidentally lifted a box of them, and the bottom was wet, and all my Maximus that I bought just crashed all over my garage floor.
See, I don't even want to hear the rest of how that story was starting. I was like, oh no, I know where this is going.
Yeah, sorry. it was a terrible night.
That is a good place to go though. I mean, it does have a nice little brew pub in there, and the food's all fancy and. The food was very good. I think we got mussels and something. I forget what else we had with the mussels. I know we had like a lamb burger or something.
Burgers, yeah. The burger was calling my name is what. But, it's such a good place and a really good beer. And, I don't know, man. I think that's my new favorite. until I find something different, I think Lagunitas.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. Too. I'm a big fan too. We do go to a lot of different restaurants, and we don't go to chains, but we go to like little local restaurants. And we do. I do usually get something Lagunitas if they have it available. I'm going with a little bit more well known, I think. Even though I don't like it as much, I still kind of enjoy this one. And this one I'm having now is a little different, but it's from the Blue Moon Brewing Company. And it is, my fiance got the, like a mixed 12 pack, where it's got all these different flavors and whatnot. And this one is, it is a cinnamon horchata ale. And it is described as being an ale with a subtly sweet yet spiced taste. So it's kind of not like a traditional man's kind of a beer, you know?
Well, Blue Moon was always kind of one that was offered to me in college, and I never wanted it because I could see through it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it is definitely a light. But it's pretty good. I mean, it is very seasonal tasting. Definitely can get that cinnamon in there.
We're kind of going through a holiday beer still, I bet. Like, you know, just because cleaning out that fridge from.
Oh yeah, I think a lot of stores are probably doing that too. It's like, hey, you want
these are cheap.
Let's make a deal on this here, you know. So anyway, okay. Before we get going, we should mention that Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook of your choice and a free 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/plainlabelpodcast and choose from over 180,000 audio programs. Download a title for free and start listening. It's that easy. Go to audibletrial.com/plainlabelpodcast and get started today. And with that, Ben, we are ready to kick off our discussion of the 1990 film Miller's Crossing.
From the makers of Blood Simple and Raising Arizona, a world where nothing is what it seems to be. Leo, is he still the boss?
The day I back down from a fight, Casper's welcome to the rackets, this town, and my place at the table.
Casper, can he muscle in?
I'm sick of taking a strap from you, Leo. And I'm sick of the high hat.
Tom, would he sell out a friend?
You shouldn't be confronting Jenny, Casper. That's what I've been trying to tell you.
I can still trade body blows with any man in this town. Except you, Tom.
And Verna.
Verna, is she Leo's girl?
What did you tell Leo?
I told him you were a tramp and he should dump you.
I want everybody to be friends. You, me, Leo, the Dane.
You know who I am?
The Dane. Has he got it figured?
You dumping Leo for the guy who put a bullet in your brother?
Bernie, will he turn the tables?
Don't smart me.
I want to watch you squirm. I want to see you sweat a little.
All you gotta do to show your friend this. Give me Bernie Burnbaum.
Tommy, you can't do this. You don't bump guys. It's not right, Tom. I can't.
The two of us have faced worse odds.
Never without reason.
I thought you said you didn't care about Leo.
I said we were through. It's not the same thing.
I'm talking about friendship. I'm talking about character. I'm talking about ethics.
Albert Finney, Gabriel Byrne, Marcia Gay Harden, John Turturro.
I can't die out here in the woods. Like a dumb animal, I can't die.
He's still alive.
You expect me to believe you?
No.
It's you all over, Tom. Alive and no heart.
No one is what they seem to be.
Up is down, black is white.
At Miller's Crossing.
So the IMDb plot synopsis is as follows. It's Prohibition era 1930s. As gang war tears apart the city of gang lord Leo and his lieutenant Tom Reagan, Tom is upset when Leo declines underling Johnny Casper's request to kill the crooked Bernie. Despite Tom's objections, Leo thinks he made the right decision because Bernie is Verna's brother and Verna is Leo's girl. Unfortunately, Casper seems to be growing in power, and just when Leo needs Tom's help the most, Tom admits he's been fooling around with Verna. Tom is thrown out of Leo's mob, and with nothing else to do, he decides to join Casper. But Tom is also talking to Bernie and Verna, and Casper's ruthless henchman Eddie Dane starts to get suspicious. His suspicions rise when Tom is ordered to kill Bernie himself, but no one knows whether or not Tom carried out the deed. Leaving Casper searching for his desired power, Dane searching for answers, Verna searching for her brother, and Tom searching for his own heart, if he has one anymore. Ooh, so that was the synopsis. That was a very detailed synopsis over at IMDb. This is one that you and I had come to because it was part of Ben Teed's Film History 101. Isn't that right?
Yes.
I think it was one where it was like, I haven't seen this, so let's do this one.
You know what? Yeah, that's been a lot of my picks. and I think that's a good way. I think that's good for me, though.
It's definitely good.
It gives me reasons to watch it.
I mean, it comes from the quad days. Right? Yeah, it comes from
absolutely.
Zachary.
Well, over the years since the quad show and stuff like that, I've started to pay more attention to, instead of like, oh, who's in that film? You know, oh, what's in that film? Once I was like in college and post-college, and post-college was when I started doing the quad, I started paying more attention to who's making these films, who's writing these films, what, you know, who's responsible for the production of these things, not just who's in them, because it doesn't matter. I mean, to me, an actor's an actor, and if they're good enough, like, you know, but the person that's producing the film makes me more interested. So I tend to pick those auteurs that I'm, like, more interested in. Mm-hmm. And as of right now, I think I can safely say this. I feel like the Coen brothers are my favorite living directors right now.
Okay.
For sure. So it's kind of naughty of me to say that and have never watched, like Miller's Crossing or what else have I not seen?
There was a handful of,
yeah, there's still a handful of them. I've seen most of them, but there's still a few important ones that I have not. And obviously when I was on for the Barton Fink one, mm-hmm. The beauty of that one is, my local indie theater was playing it. So I was super excited because I was going to get to experience it 30 feet tall in front of me, rather than watching it, sadly alone in my living room. but you know, for Miller's Crossing, I have a box set of some Coen Brothers Blu-rays, and this was one of them that was in it, and I'm finally glad to have sat down and experienced it for the first time.
Yeah. My brief history before we get into what we thought about it was, this was just kind of one of those deals where I was going through my Netflix and was like, going through directors, really. Oh. You know, it was just kind of like, oh, well, that's, I don't know, this is a Spielberg I haven't seen, or this is a Coppola I haven't seen, or Kubrick, or whoever. And I was like, okay, well, here's a Coen Brothers movie, and I haven't seen Miller's Crossing. And it's kind of one that you don't really hear a ton about. And
no.
Or not as much as the
I
others.
I can see why now, though. You know? Now that we're getting into it.
Yeah. Like, So I watched it, and I don't know what I expected. But the first time I watched it, I didn't think much of it, actually. And I was kind of like, huh, why did I not like that much? And so it was one where I knew that it was better than what I was giving it credit for. And so when the options came around and you had said that you hadn't seen Miller's Crossing, I was like, oh, that'll be perfect. That'll give me another opportunity to watch it with kind of fresh eyes for whatever was going on at the time.
Another chance.
Yeah, give it another chance. And I watched it and really enjoyed it, like enjoyed it much more than I expected to. And, I know that our mutual friend, Mr. Crucy, talks about how it may be his favorite. I don't know if it's I don't know if it's my favorite Coen Brothers movie, but it's definitely in the upper group.
Maybe I have to see it a few more times in order for it to kind of move up, but I do consider it a lesser Coen Brothers film.
Okay.
Hold
which
on.
Is, yeah, which is not saying me. It's a Paul
yeah,
Blart.
Which
or
is
something.
Not saying it's a bad movie. Or Paul Blart. Yeah, exactly. Paul Blart. but I will say, it kind of reminds me of, because I just saw, last night, I saw, Hateful Eight.
Okay.
And, in theaters. And like, it's the same thing. Like, even though I think Tarantino's cool, and I like his films, and he's got a style and stuff like that. Even a lesser Tarantino film, like Hateful Eight, I felt like Hateful Eight was a little bit lesser than some of his others. It's still a good movie. Like, I still recommend it. Like, it's the same thing here. I really recommend, this movie. It's such a handsome film.
Yes.
It's very masculine. It's very, it's like polished, wood is what it is. It's like this, like, dark, wood, you know, I think of the time and the era and stuff like that, I think of, and I think of this film and scenes back from the film. If I close my eyes and think Miller's Crossing, I think of the actual place, Miller's Crossing, where they go with the hat, twirling around in the wind. And then the second thing I think of is like dark wooden desks polished and like
dark offices and a person either sitting behind a desk or leaning over one. Yeah. That's what I would think of.
Exactly.
Like leaning over one with a cigar and yelling at somebody.
I think though, I was doing some research a couple hours before our recording, and I was reading up on like the making of this movie and stuff like that. And I guess I found out that Joel and Ethan were writing this film together, and they had a certain type of writer's block. They weren't able to get through a certain portion of this,
right?
And while I can, and this kind of directly spawned on me having read that, it made me focus in on that and think, okay, that must be what I'm feeling. That weird, like I'm missing something here.
Like you're feeling, kind of feeling. The effort. Like you're feeling the labor they had to go through.
Maybe I'm trying to think of like. I'm trying to think of like, I feel like every single movie that I've enjoyed I've enjoyed every single one of the Coen Brothers films that I've seen. So, but there's something about this one that I feel like part of it is missing. I feel like it's missing something very Coen Brothers-esque that isn't there. Barton Fink is full of quirky, weird moments, when he's in the producer's, office, and the guy's like, we want that Barton Fink feeling and stuff like that. And like, and you got it. Or Fargo. Fargo's full of these weird, quirky, that, I guess Miller's Crossing, the world of Miller's Crossing is missing that quirk. And there are echoes of it. There are moments of that in Miller's Crossing, particularly, when the character of Tom fights, with the chair.
Yes.
He stands up and has the chair in his hands.
Exactly
or something like
what
that.
I was going to say. Yeah.
There's like a funny moment there. When Giovanni, Casper, like hits his son, like any moment where he's like dealing with his son, he's supposed to be this real Italian, mob boss kind of guy, and then there's this moment where he has to turn and kind of be a parent, but he's like, he's kind of a pushover of a parent.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really kind of cute.
That kid is the worst.
And the kid is the worst because he's just, but he's also just kind of like, he's totally a brat and it's just kind of funny to see that, but it's all in the face of this real moment that characters like, I feel like every one of these movies has a moment like that where there's a ridiculous, happening or set of characters happening in front of either the main character or some, you know, mostly the main character, I guess, is the stuff that I'm thinking of, the examples from other Coen Brothers films. But usually there's something really weird and crazy happening in front of them, like bizarre, you know, silliness, and they're thinking about their problem, but they're getting distracted by something else. Usually the best scenes, too.
Yeah, sure. Do you think it has something to do with the fact that this is such a straight-laced main character and performance?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. This is like the first character I've seen from them that feels like there is no lightheartedness to them. There's almost, you know, honestly, I don't think there is a want in Tom Reagan. I think he just, maybe in a certain point in the film, he wants to get out alive, but is there a drive that you could think of? I mean, he's after Verna, maybe a little bit, that I can see. But other than to get back at, Bernie or to, put, any of the, bosses, out of, you know, make them stir in their seats or whatever. Like, he doesn't really have any sort of drive.
Well, I feel like he's a two-dimensional character.
Yeah.
And he is a two-dimensional character that doesn't have any quirk to him. And in this sort of style of movie, it makes it come off a little more bland than the expectations from a Coen brothers movie.
Right.
Now, if I watch,
you and I are going in with expectations.
Sure, sure. Now, if I watch No Country for Old Men, sure, there are people that are two dimensional because they want money and that's all they want. You know, they're not a real person. There's a monstrous killer and that's all he is. Right. So, but they're used in different ways. It's not for me as much of a type of a film as this is a, you know, a 30s gangster mob sort of a movie, and it sort of revels in all of the expectations that come with that. And so it's easy to where movies like that had more depth if you find the good movies, but a lot of them are just very much a character A is trying to survive and he has to take down character B and C. And there's not as much meat on the bone, kind of.
No, yeah, I see what you're saying.
And so I think that what they're doing is they are making a movie in a style, and they're just showing, look, we can do the Hollywood format, and we can do it really fucking well, but overall it's not as memorable to a lot of people without a lot of those Coen brother type things that happen.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. And I'm glad that you're kind of pulling on that and bringing that out, because that was something going into this talk that we're having, that I couldn't quite feel. I'm like, there's something missing about this in comparison to why I love Marge Gunderson in Fargo, or why I love, Llewyn Davis in Inside Llewyn Davis. Like, mm-hmm. there's certain things about each one of these characters that are mastered in every single other film, but I feel like Tom Reagan is not finished.
Finished. And part of that, I mean, I like Gabriel Byrne in Treatment, the HBO series about a psychologist or psychiatrist, I guess it would be. I think that he's good in that, but he is not full of a lot of expression. He looks the same from the beginning to the end, and I struggle to in my mind to think of facial expressions that he uses in the film.
Good point.
I just think of him as straight faced the entire movie, and obviously that's a choice by the directors and the actor, or it's not in there by mistake. But that doesn't necessarily mean that I appreciate it, I guess. Like, I get what they're doing, but that doesn't make me like it.
There's almost maybe this is what they're going for, which is, you know, who am I to tell Coen brothers how to do their job? But like, I almost feel like there's no dynamic change in what this character, like, character comes in without a heart, character comes out without a heart. Like, he just seems like he's very, yeah,
I mean, he has a heart in that he doesn't kill Bernie the first time around.
Right.
He decides to lose it at the end, right?
Yeah.
He decides to forego this heart because it hasn't done him any favors. It hasn't done anything for him. And so he's just like, the hell with it. You've got to go. Spoilers.
Oh, yeah.
For the end of the movie, you know? But I don't know. So I think that that's, I think that there's a little bit of change there, but it's just, I don't know. It is a movie that I think does reward repeat viewings in that when I sat back and didn't worry so much about, okay, I need you to start being the Coen brothers. I need you to do what you normally do, and just sat and watched it as a movie of its time, as a movie of a gangster movie, then I really ended up liking it a lot.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of fun of it. I thought the thing that was the most Coen brothers, besides the fight, which is hilarious, when he's like, geez, Tom, you know, and just walks away and then gets his buddy finally. But it's when they are after, when they're after Albert Finney.
And, oh, the Danny Boy scene.
Yes, and they have the very over-the-top death where he shoots the guy in the window and shoots him like 5,000 times.
He's an artist with that Tommy gun.
Yes, shoots him like 5,000 times, and that guy is shooting his gun with unlimited bullets everywhere.
Yeah, he just has unlimited bullets. He never has to change the clip or anything like that. That's the best part of that scene.
Yeah, and so that stuff's really fun, where, you know, the guy's getting
shot in the
back.
Of course, we love to see the artist do something very good. We like watching people on screen do their job very well, and he definitely can.
Yes.
He was made to shoot a Tommy gun.
And so that's what I thought was fun, is it's like, okay, this is a very serious, very somber attempt by the Coen brothers, and it's like, oh, well, here they still are. Like, here's the little glimpses of them shining through. And it's like, you know, they can't make it the whole way without doing something a little bit of their own. You know, it's not like, it would be like Tarantino making a romantic comedy that doesn't have swearing in it or something. It's like, no, it's still going to be in there. You're still going to have some Tarantino that pulls through. And just like here, they're trying to play it straight with this gangster movie, but it's still going to have parts that are very Coen brothers that come out.
Yeah, I see shades of it.
Yes.
And also just in some of the performances as well. I get super excited when I see Totoro on the screen again, just having come up, the last film that I saw that was brand new to me as Coen Brothers being Barton Fink.
Yeah.
And knowing that he shows up again and again and again in some of the other films.
You know, and what is funny to me is, like you said, they were struggling with this script and then wrote Barton Fink. And Barton Fink's about a struggling writer who's trying to work for Hollywood. He doesn't understand what they want. And, you know, then there's the complaint or the, you know, sort of things like, well, this is the Coen brothers trying to sort of be as Hollywood mainstream as they can be and just doing a standard film. And they struggled with it and had writer's block with it and had to write something else that was just purely Coen brothers during it just to get that out and get it out of their system.
That's incredible.
Before they could reset.
Just how insane, like, yeah, and it says, I'm reading here on this article, they wrote Barton Fink in 3 weeks,
mm-hmm.
which is awesome. And then before they were able to resume the Miller's Crossing screenplay. So yeah, that's, man.
Yeah, I mean, they are something else. I did write that even though this was, a film that can feel labored. Like I did put it, it really, it's not that it asks a lot out of the audience in terms of there's, too complex of a plot or anything, but I did write that it's dangerously intellectual at times to where the audience really needs to pick up things as it happens because it's not real clear how everything works and it's not real. It's not dumbed down at all. Like, it's not like, here are all of the characters, everyone, and here is why this person doesn't like this person. You know, it is, the movie starts and you're going and you have to figure out who everyone is, and yes, people are introduced just when you meet them, but it's not like, here's the history of this character and here's why you need to know him, and that sort of thing.
Starts right in the middle of things, yeah. That, starting right in the middle of things is always, I always feel is a good way to start, you know, to start a story and stuff like that, but, this is to one of those where if you're not careful and not paying attention, like I was folding laundry watching this movie.
Yeah.
So if I spent too much time looking down and not listening rather than seeing what was on the screen, I could see that, like, yeah, there was some things that I'm like, wait, so who, who's against who and who is trying to find out information on who, like, you know, so.
Yeah, because we do have sequences where, like, the police chief and the mayor will be in both offices, both mobsters' offices in the rival mob, you know, and, yeah. And they're in there talking to both of them, and they're all kind of palling around, and you'd be like, wait a minute, what? But you're like, oh, man, that's funny. Like, look at how neither one of those symbols mean anything, the police chief or the mayor, that they're both bowing down to whoever wins this rivalry, you know, right. Whoever wins this battle. And so it's stuff like that to where it's like, you don't have a voiceover saying, well, the mayor and the chief of police was playing both sides and was just waiting to see which one came out on top. You know, you don't need little things like that. It's just implied, but you have to be watching, you know, and it's not like it's really that dense of a movie. It's just like, they're not interested in giving you all of those things. You just have to watch the film.
Right. Yep.
So what do you think of, what do you think of Marcia Gay Harden as Verna?
Everybody except Albert Finney and, Turturro, I don't think I've ever seen before in a film. So this is my first time seeing her. I'm pretty sure.
Wait a minute. You've seen Gabriel Byrne before. He's the main guy in, The Usual Suspects.
I have not seen Usual Suspects.
Oh, don't even talk to me right now, Ben.
what am I doing on the show even? You know what? Actually, now that I think about it, I think I have seen Marcia Gay Harden and stuff.
Yeah, Marcia Gay Harden, she was in The Mist with Thomas Jane.
Yes.
And she was the biblical, the hand of God and all this stuff that she was like lost her mind and was like super religious. And my fiance had a very negative visceral reaction to her. She's like, oh my God, I hate that woman. So.
And she's in Into the Wild.
Yeah, she's in Into the Wild. Yeah.
So.
But yes, I do appreciate her. I thought she was an interesting choice because she's not like damsel-y looking to me.
No, she's not. And like, she doesn't, what would you say? Does she necessarily play like in a noir type of movie? Normally the tropes that you would have if you're a female character, you're either a good girl or you're a bad girl. You know, you're either working for or against the protagonist.
Yeah.
And I don't think she was really either. I think she just kind of hated Tom a lot.
they had that whole love hate, you know, oh, I hate you so much, and then they'd have sex kind of a thing.
Which I feel like was only once. Maybe I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, well, I mean, she would stay with him sometimes, but I think it was only implied very specifically a time or two, I think. I don't know. I thought that she was, I don't know that she was necessarily well cast. I think she's a wonderful actress and I do like what she does, but I don't know that she struck me as femme fatale or the sort of, you know, His Girl Friday type, where it's just like, you know, the little buddy friend girl that is going to help out. But then again, I don't know what I would have wanted because I do like that she's a little more mature looking. I didn't want some like 17-year-old looking girl that was sleeping with Albert Finney and Gabriel Byrne.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
You know, but I don't know. There's just something about her didn't work as well as I wanted to. And I feel like I'm ragging on the movie a lot. I still really enjoyed the movie. And like I said, for me, it's still in the upper group of Coen brother films, but it's one of those where it's so unlike the rest of them. I feel like, it's easier for me to sort of pick at as opposed to, I don't know, man, that's just Coen brothers being Coen brothers, you know?
Probably my favorite scene with her was towards the end when, I think when she has a gun drawn on him. Mm-hmm. In like the stoop of a doorway or something like that on the side of the street, as he's going towards, cause she wants to know answers. She wants to know what happened to my brother. Where is he? Is he alive and stuff like that? And he gives his answer and she's never happy. I don't think she's ever happy throughout the entire film. She just, even the getting her answer isn't enough to really satisfy her. But when you got a partner like Tom, when Tom Regan, you can rest assured that you're probably not going to be happy either, because he's real hard to get along with.
Yeah, he is. I guess I wished I would have had some sort of depth of character with him. Like, I wish there would have been, yes, he's addicted to gambling, but does that really end up hurting him that much, or is that really that big of a deal? Not really.
Yeah.
I mean, it's easy to go with, like, oh, he's an alcoholic, or oh, he uses, plenty of tropes.
You know what I mean, though, when I say, like, you normally a character, in order for them to be dynamic and to change from the beginning of the movie to the end of the movie, they usually have to be given, like, some sort of goal or a...
Yeah,
or a,
there has to be some sort of end game that they're striving
right,
towards.
Right, and I never really felt like there wasn't anything. Like, let's say you and I were writing this, like...
Yeah.
Tom wanted, like, maybe Eddie's job. Eddie Dane.
Yeah.
Like kind of like right-hand man to
Casper.
Yeah. Like, at least that would be, I don't know. I feel like even that would be, like he wanted appreciation or something like that from his bosses or, but he's mostly just going back and forth between them, really just avoiding getting shot. Pretty much.
Yeah, it's more about
his want is just survival. Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of his main thrust, but all of the problems are brought upon by himself, really. He wouldn't have gotten into any situation to begin with if he wasn't sleeping with Marcia Gay Harden. Right? That wouldn't have
led
to all of his problems. So it's like, I don't know. I don't know that we're supposed to really feel bad for him because he brought upon all of his troubles.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I'm sitting there thinking, like, there's not really anything I could think of that's really redeemable other than, like, being able to maybe see myself in the idea of, okay, I'm being taken out into the woods and I understand that if there's not a body out here decomposing, that I'm going to get shot if I think of myself in Tom Reagan's place. But because, and you see him about to crack and it's such a good scene and stuff like that, I guess if given more of a motivation and more of a conflict for Tom, maybe that scene would have been a little better, a little heavier.
Sure.
And maybe the movie might have, the movie as a whole might have been a little better.
Sure, could be. I think that I really like that sequence whenever they go to Miller's Crossing. Both times that they go. I do like how John Turturro plays Bernie with his whole groveling. And I think that that's the most interesting character in the movie for me because he's dangerous. Because you're not sure what in the hell he's going to do. Because he goes between being pathetic and then you're like, wait a minute. What is he doing here? He just got, free. He just got let go. Like, he's supposed to be running away. What is he doing here? And then I'm pissed. It's like, respect that this guy just let you off the hook. Instead, you're here screwing around in his place. Like, he's saying, well, maybe I'll just show up and then, then Tom will be in trouble too and all of this stuff. And so whenever Turturro was mentioned or whenever he was on screen, I was like, oh, okay, this is what I'm talking about. This is Tom's real problem now is he's got to figure out what to do with Bernie. And Bernie was just such a fun foil to follow for a while. Let's see. What about, so there were some things in the script that I really enjoyed too. I think one of the lines that really stuck out to me was a real simple line. And it was when he says, they were starting to talk about, well, maybe this or maybe that. And he goes, maybe doesn't make it so. And I was like, ooh, cold. Cause it was right towards the end of the movie and he's talking to Turturro. And I really liked that. And then of course the main thing is I love the, look in your heart because that's the sort of theme that's going throughout the movie, right? Like that's the point.
I keep hearing
of
the
movie. It. You know, you hear it several times, the look in your heart. And Verna says it, and Bernie says it, and, I think Tom says it to himself maybe, but I feel like you're hearing it a lot. And so I was like, it's these simple little moments that the Coen brothers can still make feel impactful when it's not complicated and it's not showy. It's not fancy. It's not crazy. It's just simple and good is kind of the way that I felt like they made the film.
Yeah. And, I've read a book a few years ago. It's been long enough to where I kind of forget some of the plots as, or the plot points as well. But it's Dashiell Hammett, Red Harvest. It's another book that, one of your past, guests, Zach Cruzy, turned me on to.
Of course he did.
Of course he did, because, those 20s gangster novels, noir novels, usually have some sort of story like that, like lines like that, repetitious, thing that is meant to be meaningful, but ultimately, you know, is the character, like there are a lot of characters in these types of stories that are like Tom Regan. Mm-hmm. They just are two dimensional. I think that's just a neon, or, I mean, this is neo-noir right now, what we're watching, but noir just in general just has plenty of those two dimensional characters like Tom Regan that I feel like, you know, Miller's Crossing can get away with it because it's doing what it normally does. Sure. in noir. So that's
well. And what's so strange to me about their career is I think about, you know, I think about this movie and I'm like, okay, 1990 is like, wow, that's a long time ago. This must be what, their 7th, 8th movie. I mean, this is their 3rd movie. So it's not, they did Blood Simple and Raising Arizona before this. So they weren't exactly household names in that they could just say, well, we're the Coen brothers. We're going to do what we want. And they're like, no, here's the movie you're making. Here's the script you turned in. So here's what you're doing. And then that must have led to their struggles that brought upon Barton Fink and then the Hudsucker Proxy, which are both crazy. And then, you know, then we have their more famous movies with Fargo and Lebowski, you know, Brother, Where Art Thou? And that sort of thing. But I just think it's interesting when I think about this film is I think about how it seems like polished professional work, like you were saying with the way that it looks, because it's a good looking film and with the dark oak colors and all of that. But it's a 3rd movie, and Raising Arizona is a silly little comedy that I think is hilarious, and we've done on the show before, and I really enjoy it. But, you know, it's not as much of a, like, capital F film as Miller's Crossing is. And Blood Simple, I don't want Zach to hear this, so I won't say what I think about that. So basically, I haven't watched it yet. So.
Oh, Blood Simple. Okay. Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, you're in for a treat. That one.
I have the audiobook, the book, and the movie, but I haven't, I haven't got into either one of them, and Mr. Crusoe hopefully is not listed. Well, not hopefully, but Mr. Crusoe will be disappointed to know.
I feel like you could have a great double feature night with both Blood Simple and No Country for Old Men. I feel like those films are just tangled up in each other's world.
See, because No Country for Old Men, that's the only movie that I've ever watched twice, just consecutively. And I don't want to be like, oh, well, it's my favorite Coen Brothers, because it's not really like pure Coen Brothers. I wouldn't describe that as being like a pure Coen Brothers movie, No Country. And so to have Blood Simple be described as similar to that, it's like, oh my God, I don't want to put this label on it that I'm going to like it so much. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, the movies from different directors where I get so excited about them that I haven't watched them still.
Do you ever feel like you're watching these Coen Brothers films and you hear echoes from the other films and the era that it was in?
Sure.
Like, I feel like there's some Lebowski and Fargo and Fargo and Lebowski and, like, you know, you move, like, this new film that's coming out from them, Hail Caesar.
Yeah.
In the beginning of February.
For me, it feels like when they did, it feels like an Oh Brother, Where Art Thou to me.
Right. Yeah. And it feels like it's going to be this big, grand, like, star-studded adventure, but it takes place in Hollywood where they can make all their little, you know, Hollywood jokes and stuff like that, that, you know, these filmmakers like to do.
That's so weird that the Coen Brothers being like as highly thought of as they are, they sure do make a lot of like inside baseball type movies.
Yeah, like
movies about Hollywood.
Yeah. Just thinking about Barton Fink and what goes on in that, and how Hollywood's projected in that film.
It just seems like
portrayed.
It just seems like they make a lot of movies about, well, this is how stuff really works, or this is like what you don't see about this kind of films. So I don't know. It's interesting. I never really thought about that.
I think Miller's Crossing stands aside from the rest of them. The rest of the ones I've seen, at least. I mean, maybe there's some No Country for Old Men in terms of like its seriousness and like how there are moments of humor in No Country for Old Men. They're very rare. Uh-huh. But for the most part, like, you're kept at this pace of like, all right, you know, but it's not the same thing because it's not, you know, I'm thinking of a list of their films, mm-hmm. trying to think of something that's comparable or has echoes the way the other films do to each other.
Yeah,
and I can't think of one for Miller's Crossing. It almost stands aside.
Yeah, I would say that Miller's Crossing is an individual film in that they did this movie this certain way, had sort of some struggles with it, and was like, you know what, this is not our sort of deal. Like, this is not really for us, is what I like to think about it. But then they did, films like Intolerable Cruelty, which is just a straight rom-com, or The Lady Killers, which was not very well received, and some other films that were just kind of more what you could describe as Hollywood films, more just standard, any director, like insert director kind of a film. And, I don't know, those I didn't care for Intolerable Cruelty at all, and I haven't seen The Lady Killers. So I don't know, it just felt like, here's what Hollywood wants us to do, we tried it, we don't like it, so we're not gonna go back to that sort of thing. Which is why it would stick out.
Yeah, and also Miller's Crossing, I guess, did terrible at the box office.
It did terrible. Like, here's what I would think. Like, even if it's not your favorite, I feel like it's still a good movie, and it didn't make shit. It made like $5 million.
The only reason why I feel responsible, a little responsible for that, what it made, was only because I was, let's just say under the age of 5. So.
In 1990, I was 11.
You were 11. Okay, yeah. Okay. All right. So you couldn't even get in the, you couldn't even buy yourself a rated R ticket.
I was probably still high on the Batman stuff. Did you see that bit of trivia? That they had reportedly turned down filming the Tim Burton Batman movie because it would have interfered with this.
Oh, the Coen brothers turned down the filming of it?
Allegedly, yeah.
Oh, wow.
That, I can't even fathom what that would be. I feel like that would have to, it would have to be something along the lines of a well-made version of the Joel Schumacher movies. Cause it would have to have some kind of silliness, I feel like. And then as soon as I say that, I think, well, wait a minute, No Country for Old Men was sure as shit serious.
Yeah.
So I don't know what it would have been like. It's
one of the cool things that was on the Blu-ray, and it was really great watching all the little extras to it, to the film. But there's this little special with Barry Sonnenfeld.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this was his second film, if I remember the little thing correctly. No, I'm sorry, this is his third as well. Third real film. He started working with the Coen brothers with Blood Simple. Like, they hired him at like a party.
Oh, is that right?
Cause beforehand he went to film school after he was talking about how he was like, I think he was a lawyer or something like that, or he just hated what he was doing. And so he just said, screw it, I'm gonna jump into cinematography. And while he was going to school, he was shooting pornos.
Huh.
And eventually, he met, Joel and Ethan at a party, and they said they needed somebody, for Blood Simple and that they were going to be shooting in another week or so. And it's just really down to the wire. And it's pretty funny. And so he's like, yeah, sure. And then he'd been on there ever since, up until Miller's Crossing.
Oh, that's crazy. I didn't know anything about that.
Yeah, he's part of a lot. Let's see, he did, Blood Simple, Raising Arizona, Miller's Crossing, and then he started directing with the Addams Family.
Oh, okay.
So.
Well, I didn't like that movie either.
There's a bunch on here where it's like, oh, I see, okay, you know, cause he directed Men in Black eventually and Wild Wild West. Or executive producer of Out of Sight. Hmm. Cinematography for Misery.
Oh, really?
And Big. And Throw Mama from the Train. When Harry Met Sally, he was a cinematographer. So he's worked on a bunch of well-known films. It's interesting to see him getting his start and how his origins and beginnings were so closely tied in with the Coen brothers. So yeah, I thought that was a little interesting little tidbit on the Blu-ray. That was nice.
A nice little tidbit. Huh. Well, do you have anything else about Miller's Crossing there, Ben? I'm all spent for all my notes.
I was going to say, I didn't take notes. So I feel like I am because I'm like, yeah, you know what? Like I feel like I'm missing something. I bet I'm going to go to sleep tonight and then go, oh crap. You know, I want to wake up and be like, I knew there was another other thing. So,
maybe a few years pass, putting this in again and seeing what you think of it.
I definitely will.
I think it would be good just because that way the sort of veil of expectation will be gone of it being a Coen, like a capital C Coen Brothers movie, you know? It'd be like, oh, right. Let's just put this in and see what I think about it. And just watching it just to watch it, I think you'll enjoy it more than watching it to discuss it, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Because some movies, it's like, okay, I've got to really pay attention because I got to make sure I know what the fuck I'm talking about. And then some movies, it's like, you know what, I'm just going to sit back and watch this. Who gives a shit?
There is one last thing that I wanted to mention.
Sure.
And that was cameos.
Yes, Mr. Buscemi.
There's a very important character named Mink, and that is played by Steve Buscemi. I wouldn't necessarily call that a cameo.
No.
He just has a small little part.
Yes.
But there are two more that I actually had no idea. Well, I did know when I saw her.
Margie.
Margie was in that. Margie. Oh, yeah. She was in as the mayor's secretary, and I think that's... Zach tweeted me before I watched this movie saying, hey, I hope you find the special cameo in there, and I think that's who he might have been talking about. But if he's not, he may have been talking about Sam Raimi.
Oh yeah, Sam Raimi is one of the guys, cause they're buddies with the Coens.
Right. I didn't spot him. I actually don't know if I know what Sam Raimi looks like.
Oh really?
But apparently he was the snickering gunman, so.
Yeah, I don't know that I knew he was in the movie, but I don't remember where he's supposed to be. I just remember Sam Raimi from all of these, behind the scenes Spider-Man 2 things where they're like Doc Ock's fighting in the water and Sam Raimi's just standing on the side with his suit because he wears a suit to the set every day.
Oh, there's another one I need to revisit, Spider-Man 2. Spider-Man 2. I don't know if that holds up. I remember really loving that one.
I don't know. I remember everyone else really loving it. I don't know. That's going down a rabbit hole of me not liking things that other people like. But yeah, so anyway, that's how I know. That's the only way I know what Sam Raimi looks like.
So cameos is what I wanted to say.
Cameos!
Because I actually had never seen Gabriel Byrne in anything or any of these other guys, but I was extremely excited to see Totoro was in this. So, yeah.
Well, you know what? Your homework, Mr. Teed, is that you need to watch The Usual Suspects.
I shall.
You need to make sure that you do not do any kind of looking up anything before you watch it, though.
To find out who Kaiser Soze is?
Yes.
Okay. It's possible I may have already gotten that spoiled.
Well, that sucks.
Decades ago.
Well, anyway, but so it's you know, Bryan Singer from the X-Men, obviously, but it's a good movie. even if you know who it is, it's still worth watching.
It's about the journey, man.
That's true, because you see, like, how the hell, how could it be, and all that, so. How does it all work? But yeah, that's one to check out, and then, for those out there that enjoy Mr. Gabriel Byrne, I would recommend In Treatment, which is a good movie on HBO, and it did a very interesting thing when it had come out a few, probably 5 years ago now, but it had five different patients that he met with, and they met for a half an hour at a time in HBO time, and they would meet every day. So the show came on Monday through Friday for a half hour, and it was like Sally, week one. The next one would be Ben, week one, you know, and then next Tuesday is Ben, week two, sort of a thing.
Jeez.
And so it would continue on, you know, from week to week. And it was really interesting. Like, I really liked it. And I haven't seen, that was just season one, and it had like Mia Wasikowska and Melissa George and, I think it's, Blair Underwood. And, a couple of other more character actor types that were in there. And on the Fridays, he was the one who would go see his own psychiatrist and be, analyzed by her. But it was really interesting. It's very much like an actor's showcase because they're just in one set and they're just talking. And it's just people acting. So, and, you know, teaching a drama class now, I appreciate just people sitting and acting. So that's fun.
Absolutely.
Okay. So, wrapping us up, that was Miller's Crossing. I really enjoy it. And I think that I still feel like I'm apparently feeling guilty. I still feel like I was ragging on the movie more,
right?
than I
feel that same way.
Yeah. More than I, should have, because I did enjoy it. I do really enjoy it. And it is one that I would probably get in a box set. I don't know if for me, I would go out and get it individually, but definitely I would get it the way that Ben did there. So, if you had any comments, you, the listeners, suggestions or movies that you'd like to hear us talk about specifically for Podshots, you could email us at plainlabelpodcast@gmail.com. You could follow the show over at Twitter. Our handle is @plainlabelpod, where you could follow me. I'm @ericwilliams79. We also have a Facebook page where you can like the show. Just search for Plain Label Podcast. And if you wanted to help us out a little bit, you could head over to Amazon.com and search our wish list. It's full of movies that we want, equipment that we need, and a whole host of other goodies in case you're in the giving mood. Just search for the wish list called Plain Label Podcast. So I do want to thank Ben once again for coming on and showing his homework with me. If people wanted to hear more from you, Mr. Teed, or get in touch with you, where can they do so?
I think it's funny because we were talking about, oh, you can reach me on Twitter or something like that. And you can, @BenTeed. It's T-I-E-D-E. But I'm never on, I feel like I'm never on there. I never use it. I'm always lurking around on there and stuff like that. So follow me @BenTeed, or even more, even better, is you can follow me on Instagram. That's really where it's at. I'm Instagram.
Insta. Man. I had some kids that said, Mr. Williams, are you on Insta? And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Oh, man.
About?
See, I'm even behind on that. I don't even know what that means.
Oh, it's just it's Instagram. It's just they just call it Insta, yeah.
You on Insta? Oh, shoot. Gosh dang it, I'm behind.
That's just a sign that you're getting old, man.
Yeah. Well, I'm hovering near 30, so I'm
what's your Instagram handle there?
It's Benjamin T.
Oh, see? God, I wish to have a unique name. You know, yeah, Eric Williams is like, so like hard.
Eric Williams.
God, it's so tough.
Eric Williams I got.
Well, like I said, when I graduated at UNL, I had four that graduated with me.
Oh my gosh, that's incredible.
There's four Eric Williamses. So I used to get all kinds of, I used to get people messaging me saying, hey, we had a lab today. Did you take notes? No, dude, that's a different guy. I'm not in your lab. And that kind of thing.
So. No, yeah, you go onto my Twitter, there's nothing interesting happening very much. I mean, you can talk with me and stuff like that, that's totally fine. But you would think I don't do anything. You get on Instagram, you can get photographic and videographic versions of how interesting my life is. Right now it's full of
dogs.
Puppy pictures and naked David Bowie, so.
Oh, yes. Good combinations. So there you go. If you want the recently deceased David Bowie and dogs, go follow Ben over on Instagram. All right, so thank you for listening, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with another co-host and another film.
To